trying to stop living.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Bed Talks. We are so happy to have some guests with us today. We have Nikki DiBarlo, and please tell me if I'm pronouncing your names correctly.
Perfect.
And Benjamin, but he goes by Ben, Helfond, who wrote a book called Our Happy Divorce, How Ending Our Marriage Brought Us Together. The title of our show today is A Unique Approach to Divorce, because a lot of times when we hear the word divorce, it conjures up a lot of bad thoughts in our mind. But we thought that Ben and Nikki had a really healthy approach to how they decided to amicably split. And so we're going to get into that in our show. So welcome, everyone. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. And thank you for dealing with such a meaningful and meaningful for everybody to be going through divorce, but especially for us, and then sharing your platform with us. So we're very grateful.
Yes, and we're really grateful to have you guys on the show. I think that, you know, when we hear the word divorce, a lot of us who've gone through divorce as kids, the last thing we typically want to do is go through divorce as adults with our significant other, and it's a really hard journey. And so can you guys talk a little bit about, you know, the good parts, like the beginning of, like, how you fell in love and kind of how your relationship progressed? In the beginning, post-divorce.
Post-divorce.
A pre-divorce. I should say pre-divorce.
Pre-divorce. Ben fell in love with me at a nightclub. No.
Yeah, right. Well, it is kind of true. Yeah,
I mean, did you say a nightclub?
I did say nightclub. I jerked.
Let me guess, on the dance floor?
No.
I was actually working.
You actually worked at a nightclub.
Okay.
Hence the fancy equipment.
Yeah. She came in one night and, she pulled up to this. It was a 30,000 square foot nightclub, big 2,000 people, and we had the whole front of it blocked off as a white zone so we could, have people in line. And she pulls up in this big car, comes screeching in. And I'm just outside, and I just people do that all this time. So my reaction is get out of here, girl. Yeah, keep it moving. And then they roll down their tinted windows, and there's these two attractive women behind the windows. And then all of a sudden, I switch from how am I going to get them out of there to how am I going to get them into the nightclub. So I pulled them into the garage, and brought them upstairs to the VIP room, and pulled out all the guns. Try to keep them there.
What vehicle was it? Was it a 1968 Lincoln Continental?
Nothing like that.
We're not that old.
I feel that old right now.
So fast forward, you guys met in a nightclub, which is not unlike a lot of couples actually that meet and connect and end up together. And tell us a little bit about the beginning parts of your marriage, like what you appreciated about each other, what drew you to the steps of getting married.
And I'm sorry, if I could just jump in right quick. I love storytelling. If we can go back to the nightclub, what was the thing that won both of you over? Whether it was something clumsy that happened, whether it was a look, I don't know. What was the...
For me, it definitely was how Ben was dressed.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Stop it, Nikki.
I should have ran. I think he had a zoot suit on. He had a pinstripe suit on.
Oh!
He had I'm surprised he didn't have a cane.
You had a fedora?
A fedora.
Oh!
Without the feather.
Oh, without the feather. Okay.
Also the shirt with the open collar.
Yes. The chain.
Tank top underneath. That was 1995. I was rocking it. But the thing is, Nikki, one thing I like about Nikki is as much as I try to pretend that I'm an extrovert or especially with women, I don't. I'm not the guy who can bat 300 and go up to 10 women and if he gets three numbers, he's good. I don't like rejection. So I need some signs. I need some, confidence that if I do ask for a number, I do ask her out, that she's going to say yes. And so Nikki, when she likes something or someone, she'll let you know.
Yes, for sure.
So I liked her confidence. I liked her forwardness. And it was done in a classy way. She came from her family. I knew who her family was. And so to me, it was her confidence. It was her forwardness. It was, you know, made me feel more confident. It lifted me up a little bit.
All the things he didn't like later on. Right.
Okay, we're going to get there.
And so we connected immediately. You know, I mean, I'm also not the person who waits the 3 days and follows the, you know, the dating rules of how long you're supposed to wait.
I think you did, though.
No, I didn't. That is still up for debate. We still argue about that. But
I think you waited.
It could have been natural. It could have been natural.
Yeah. It was, like I said, it was 1995, 96. But, you know, I think one thing that we did, the mistake we made, is we were in our 20s. You know, we had this infatuation with each other. We, you know, sometimes we get lust and love mixed up, you know, at that time. There was a connection in the beginning. It was new. It was fresh. But I think the mistake Nikki and I made when you sort of, and I hate to use this word, but, you know, sort of autopsy postmortem of our marriage, is that we went through all the red lights. Even though red lights were presented in front of us about maybe this isn't the right thing. For you two to get married.
We just went right through them all.
Right through them. That's a good analogy. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we did.
And so Nikki was sick on the wedding day. You know, that should have told her something, her stomach. And it wasn't like throwing up sick. It was like an acid, like, oh, my God, I just married this dude sick. you know, I was sitting in the mirror. I had hair at the time. Doing my hair and looking at myself and saying, you shouldn't do this.
Wow.
Like, it was the first time I was really honest about that. I don't know if it was the first time I was honest, but it was just so sobering sitting in the mirror on my wedding day, about to walk down the aisle going, this is a mistake.
I mean, and as I was walking down the aisle, my dad looks at me. I mean, I am the baby of the family, so the last thing he wanted me to do was probably get married when I was then. But he looks at me and he says, you don't have to do this, you know.
That's what your dad said?
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that he loves Ben, and he still loves Ben, but he's like, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. And I was
everybody around us knew.
It's a little late now.
I mean, wouldn't you say, Nikki, that everybody around us sort of knew that it wasn't...
Right. Like my sister said to me, she's like, I wasn't about to tell you. She's like, you would have taken my head off.
Yeah.
She's like, you never would have listened to me. And I'm like, well, maybe next time you can...
Say something.
Say something.
Right.
But it wasn't...
Let's hope there's not a next time.
There wasn't, Nikki and I weren't, it wasn't because we weren't, or we were fighting, or it was abusive, or it was, you know, a nasty relationship. It just wasn't, you can tell when somebody's in love, right? You could, like, with Nikki and her husband now, Chad, I can look at them and say that those two are meant to be together. Those two are absolutely in love, because she never, because I had the experience of being married to Nikki, right? She never looked at me like that. She never, you know, wanted to hold my hand and poke. You know, so it's just like you could tell when people are in love. And I think that people around us who loved us could tell that we weren't meant to be together, meant to be married. Now, with all that said, we wouldn't go back and change a thing. Because of the growth of people, but also because of our beautiful son.
Right, so, exactly.
You know, that's the deal. Is we just, you know, we went through all the... It all comes down to what went wrong in our marriage was that we did it.
Let me cut you off for a moment. Can we go back to something you said? You said that you went through all the red stop signs. So for people right now who are maybe in that stage of dating where they're thinking about engagement or they're engaged, but they have this feeling in the back of their mind that this isn't the right move, but they're getting caught up, right? Because when you're getting engaged and you're getting married, there's a lot of excitement around the ceremony. I always say the ceremony is the shortest part of the stint of marriage.
It is.
The real marriage happens after you're married, right?
That's
right.
I was definitely caught up.
Right. So what would you...
Being a princess.
Right. And we're taught, especially from women, that there's going to be this guy that comes to save you, right? And he's going to marry you and everything's going to be happy. And then guys are like, I'm going to have this wife that I could do all these things with. She's going to be all these things to me. And so I think we both enter, right, with these high level expectations. So for people sitting where you guys were, like when you were first in love, thinking about getting married, but having these second doubts and having people around you kind of notice things, what would you say were some of those red stop signs that you should have paid attention to that can help them make that decision if they should proceed with getting married or if they should pause?
I mean, I think for me, it was just like an internal battle that I had with myself that I just kind of said, you know what? This is just me being, I chalked it up to me being like young. I mean, I wasn't 20, but you know, I was young and I just thought, oh, you know, this is the way it's supposed to feel when you're getting married. Like you're supposed to feel these things. But I think now that I looked back on it, those like, yes, you're supposed to feel some of that, but you're not supposed to feel it to the extent that I felt it. Mm. Like, and I think too, I totally got caught up in the fact that this is, you know, this is what I was supposed to do. I met this great guy. We fell in love. We, you know, oh, you know, the next steps are you want, like, I wanted a fairy tale wedding. I wanted a, you know, a fairy tale life. And I was going to be, and that's, you know, I guess I didn't really think about the fact that it's so much harder to achieve that if you have feelings inside that aren't, you know, that are kind of telling you otherwise. And I think people just need to really listen to what they're feeling inside. And maybe, you know, sometimes talk to people that are closest to you, you may not want to listen to, but they definitely see something that you don't always see.
Right. Because you're too close to it.
You might be feeling it, but you don't know what exactly you're feeling.
And you know, when I hear you guys talk, Elizabeth had, showed me this social media message, and the message was the heart. I think the heart was pulling the brain. And if you remember that, it was the heart was on a bicycle and the brain was behind it. And when she showed me that, instantly, I said, wow, that's pretty good, because we sometimes listen to our heart, but fail to really take heed to what the brain, the technical aspect of it, is really telling us to do or not to do. Do you feel like, looking back at that, that was the case? You know, you were both were being led by your heart, but the brain, with just the thinking portion of it, the reasonable portion, let's push that to the side right now.
We should have listened a little more to our brains. But yeah, and I'm not telling everybody to go get married even if they don't feel like it, but I mean, we wouldn't have Asher.
Right.
If we wouldn't have gone through this.
Right.
So something inside, like we were, I mean, I just always say that we were meant to be married because we were meant to have that child.
Right.
And I think a lot of times after the divorce, people do focus on all the negatives. And that's what I liked about your book, Our Happy Divorce, how ending our marriage brought us together. Because even if you had an acrimonious situation and it didn't work out, if you've had kids or if you even had happy memories together, there's still things you gain. There's still things you learn in that relationship. But somehow we tend to twist to all the negatives, right, when the divorce happens.
100%.
Yeah.
And when even widen the lens a little bit wider and in life, I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? And yes, we can go back and we can play the what ifs. And if we hadn't, you know, done this or hadn't done that, then we wouldn't be. But I think it's important to tell people, you know, through our experience, you know, the red lights and we went through them you know, ways to avoid that. You know, I think the biggest thing also, and Nikki did touch on this, but society, right? And I think that, you know, millennials today are catching a lot of flack, right? I mean, it's becoming a word for lazy or whatever. But one thing that they're doing right is they're waiting. They're waiting to get married. And it's all, it's bringing the divorce rate down. But, you know, Nikki and I were at that age, dating a few years. The other thing is, we had moved to Florida before we had gotten married. So this is like, this has to happen because I've been dating this girl 3 years. We've moved to Florida. It has to happen. So that's the society part of it. That's the brain thinking. I'm still talking myself into why we should get married instead of being honest with myself of why we probably shouldn't.
Right. So.
What is your biggest mission in writing your book, Our Happy Divorce? What do you hope to accomplish with couples who might be sitting in a similar situation you guys had to go through?
Go ahead.
Okay. See, this is a perfect example of Nikki and Ben post-divorce, because that would not have happened if we were married.
No, I would tell him to shut it. Although sometimes I still do tell you that.
Right. The biggest example, and I'll try to keep this very quick because it's just about relatedness. That's all. It's our story. We're very proud of, we've always been very proud of the life we've created post-divorce, but it's our life and it had always been our life. And we, you know, go around our certain, normal life of posting on social media and people are like, wow, your story is so amazing. It's so inspiring. You guys are amazing. And not platitudes, but a genuine, like, you guys should tell your story. And so finally, and this was my idea, and I had to convince Nikki to do it because it didn't just make sense for me to write a book. I had to have my partner in this thing write it with me. And so it took, you know, a couple years for me to convince her to do it. But all it is our story. And I've learned a lot in my life. The most powerful tool for change for me is related. When I can, you know, not necessarily from a therapist, although therapy has been tremendous for me, but if I can sit across the room from somebody and I know that they've been to hell and they've been out of hell and they got out of hell, it gives me more inspiration that or strive to be something because I too want to get out of hell. And what we were going through and in divorce, it's hell. It pushes all your buttons, the romance, the finance, the whole, the whole spectrum of emotions. And we got out of it. And so finally we decided that, you know what, let's just tell our story. And let's just tell, when we don't tell the blood and guts, the gory details of why the marriage failed. I mean, look, it failed because of most marriages, right? But that's not the important part. The important part is how we got better and what we did to come to our happy divorce. So it came, the motivation behind the book was, look, this is our story. Read it. If anything, hopefully it'll give you inspiration that you can do something different. You can do this different. Or, you know, I want to know more how Ben and Nikki did it because that's something that I want to achieve.
In other words, alternatives. You guys have really just provided like positive alternatives to what everyone knows can be very challenging when you talk about divorce. And that's the part that I knew drew my attention because it is a different alternative to what the norm is when, you know, you have two people with children that split.
Yeah, exactly. And we understand that there are plenty other ways and plenty other ways that people got to quote unquote our happy divorce. It's just ours.
Cool. And before we end out part one of our discussion about our happy divorce, I'm talking to Ben and Nikki. I just wanted to hear Nikki a little bit. You talk about the mission you had behind writing the book.
I mean, I think too. I'm when it comes to stuff like this, I'm a little more shy about telling my story, and you know, and so it took a lot of Ben begging to say the least of me, like to get me to do it, you know, and we would, you know, we like all divorcing couples, we would fight along the way of making this book, and I would tell him that I was going to stick the book up as maybe that's why it took 4 years, but I think in the end people would look at our, like, people would always comment on our, like, we would just be posting family events and, like, family gatherings, and, like, people would always say, I don't get it. Like, how did you do it? Can't you tell us how you do this? Like, you guys make it look so easy. So, I mean, I think that's for me was like, okay, maybe even if we help one couple, like, as long as we're, you know, as long as we make our mark on one couple, that's better than none. So I think that for me was like my driving force. I'm like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, and the book is really unique because I like that it tells it from both perspectives. So one chapter is like Ben, then it's Nikki. And it's funny how you could be going through the same thing. And this is just like having siblings. You could have the same experience. You know, you could be raised by the same parents, but have totally different viewpoints of
different
your childhood.
Yeah.
So even within your marriage, like I like that you were showing different perspectives because it's so hard for us to know what's going on in someone's head. And when the communication is not there, we start assuming what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's where it really gets dangerous.
I wish I could say that was my idea, but I do have to give credit. You know, there's a show on one of the premier networks, and I think it was Showtime, called The Affair.
Oh, yeah.
And what it did was it was an hour show, and it took half an hour one person's perspective of the same incident, and then took the other person during the second half. Yeah. So that was sort of the inspiration of trading, especially, you know, our coffee shop meeting where it was turning point of our divorce. But I wanted, you know, we wanted to tell my story, how I got to the coffee shop, and then Nikki's story of how she walked into the coffee shop and what she was going through, and then what I was going through. So it is, and that's why I said earlier, this book only worked, and I was only going to do it if Nikki was going to join me on this journey, because she's joined me on this journey for the past 13 years post-divorce, and it just didn't make sense for me just to spew, you know, my story. But I do have to say, I joked in the beginning, and it actually came true, but my main objective wasn't to help people or do whatever, but it was to get Nikki on a national TV show, because that was her biggest fear, and sure enough, it came up that we were, you know, got the honor beyond Good Morning America to tell our story.
Which is awesome, yeah.
And I had succeeded in my true, like, evil
way.
It's
not my thing.
It's not her thing. I mean, but it, for her to do it and for her to open up like this, I think it's been good for her. But I also think that she's done a tremendous job of, from a reserved person, but she's also seen the benefits of helping people. And I don't mean to talk to Nikki, but I'm just telling you how I, you know, perceive the growth in you from 4 years ago. This is never going to happen. You know, she's never going to do this, you know. And when we wrote the book, we didn't talk about you have to change your story or you have to change your thing or this doesn't work. Our stories were our stories individually. Yeah. So, you know, Nikki didn't tell me, you know, change this a little bit. This isn't right, Ben. You know, or this isn't right. And I didn't go, this isn't right, Nikki. We didn't touch each other's chapters at all.
Yeah, and I think it's powerful for your son, too. Like, as he gets older and as your other kids get older and they look back, if they go through something similar, they'll feel a lot more comfortable having that conversation with you. And they'll probably choose a lot of with a lot more deliberation based on what you guys have gone through and the fact that you're doing it in such a harmonious matter. I'm still in Kay's word because he thought that a good topic for a good way to subtitle this show would be to talk about a harmonious
our harmonious departure.
Conscious uncoupling made a ton of money for somebody.
Yes.
You should copyright that.
Absolutely. So on that note, we're going to end out part one of our discussion around a unique approach to divorce with Nikki and Ben, who wrote Our Happy Divorce, How Ending Our Marriage Brought Us Together. In part two, we're going to go more into the evolution of their relationship post-divorce. Thank you guys for tuning in to Bed Talks. And don't forget to subscribe to future episodes on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Until next time, XOXO. I won't pretend.